You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The most recent climate report, climate-related risk, security risk, poses a bleak look on the future we are heading towards if the climate emergency isn't addressed. Within the report, it suggests by 2050, 55% of the world's population will be subject to unlivable heat from climate change, and we could likely head towards a mass extinction if drastic change doesn't occur within the next 10 years. One of the authors of the report and research director for Breakthrough National Center of Climate Restoration in Australia, David Spratt, joined me to discuss the report. He starts off by telling me about the scenario has proposed within that report.
At the moment, as your listeners will know, countries have made various voluntary commitments to reducing their emissions that came out of the Paris climate talks in 2015. And if you look at those commitments, they would still result in the world being at least 3 degrees warmer than it was in 1900, what's called roughly pre-industrial, and before we started putting large amounts of fossil fuels in the atmosphere. Now, it could be 3 degrees. There are some system feedbacks which could take it to 4 degrees, but the present commitment, if they're not improved upon, is 3 or 4 degrees. And our aim is that we need to be very clear about what the impacts, the effects on society would be of 3 to 4 degrees. The World Bank, a fairly conservative organisation some years ago, said that they thought that we probably couldn't adapt to 4 degrees. That is, we simply couldn't cope with it. Last year we put out a report called What Lies Beneath about some of the science, and we had a forward by a guy called Professor John or Hans Joachim Schellenhuber, who is perhaps one of the most eminent climate scientists in the world. He's the advisor of the scientific and climate advisor to Pope Francis and also to the German Chancellor Angela Merkel. And he has said recently, and I'll quote him, he says, if we continue down this present path of 3 or 4 degrees of warming, he says, there is a very big risk that we will just end our civilization. The human species will survive somehow, but we will destroy almost everything we have built up over the last 2,000 years.
Mm. So in terms of a breakdown of human civilization and potential existential threat, could you paint more of a picture for
that? Well, look, perhaps I can start with something we already know about, which is this is a microcosm of that. And that is the situation we've seen in Syria since 2011. The Syrian conflict has many causes, but two of them are really directly related to climate change. One was an extraordinary drought in eastern Syria in the previous period, which resulted in the internal migration or shifting of more than a million people because they simply couldn't survive in these lands anymore. And you already had more than a million people, refugees in Syria as a consequence of the Iraq war. So you had incredible internal migration and social dislocation caused by this drought in part. At the same time, there were a couple of climate events in other parts of the world that led to a really big spike in the price of wheat. So we had enormous fires in Russia, and Russia decided to ban wheat exports for 6 months. At the same time, there was a drought in China, a failure of the monsoon, which meant that their crops were down as well. And those two events led to a tripling of the price of wheat on the international market, and that became a trigger for the Arab Spring and obviously for the problems in Syria as well. Now, in Syria, you have a population of about 17 million people, and as a consequence of those climate events, plus obviously internal political issues, the Arab Spring, you've had a war that's gone on for 7 years, which has resulted in the displacement internally and externally of 11 million people, almost two-thirds of the population. So that's just one example of how climate can lead to the breakdown of the state and cause a huge amount of transmigration, which has had political consequences in Europe. So if we imagine that multiplied by another 50 countries, you know, we have already a glimpse of what that future could look like.
Mm. So this is, of course, an incredibly bleak report, and something yes. you've commented on in this is that people seem unprepared to envisage this kind of chaos. Why do you think it seems to there seems to be this kind of global blind eye to the consequences of climate change?
Look, I think there are several reasons. Obviously, the really big conclusion we draw from our report, and yes, it is grim because we need to be brutally honest about where we're going. If we look at, for example, the work of Greta Thunberg, the student school striker from Sweden, she's been very direct in her language. I think it's important that we really be honest about the problem. We have the solutions to solve this. This is not a problem of economic and technological incapacity. It's a problem of political and social will. Why is that a problem? I think often these predictions or projections seem to be far off in the future, and we discount the future. We think, oh, that's a long way away, we'll solve it. But in fact, if we look at what's happened in Syria, if we look at what's happened in Darfur, if we look at these incredible storms that hit Mozambique, Cyclone Haiyan in the Philippines, even that superstorm Sandy off New York, which inundated part of Manhattan. We see it's actually now, but people put it off into the future. The second thing is that while I think the community is very concerned, we haven't really had political leadership, and I think the biggest element of that is that the business world, which obviously has a vital role in politics and determining often whether politicians will take a stance, the business world has been sitting on its hands watching and not providing any leadership. So that's a second issue. And the third is that this is a really big challenge. I mean, climate change is the biggest problem that the world is facing, and it requires us to actually sit down and say, hey, if we're going to solve this, you know, this is an emergency. This is like a bushfire or a flood or a cyclone hitting us. We have got to get out of normal mode and accept that we've got to spend whatever we need to get out of this. And I don't think we've got to that point yet.
Hmm. So you said we have solutions to these problems. What could governments actually tangibly be doing to help curb this?
Well, look, I think the first thing the government's got to do is say to its scientists and advisors, give us the unadulterated truth about the problem, which is one of the things we've done in our report. I mean, our report is partly directed towards the Defence, National Security and Intelligence Services. You know, if I was New Zealand, I would say to your government, get your intelligence people to assess this report and tell us it's correct so that we actually have an honest assessment of the problem. Then I think you need a commitment out there to say, we are going to protect the people. The role of the government is to protect the people, you know, to look after their safety and well-being, whether that be in terms of their physical well-being or health, education systems, those to help the disadvantaged. This is the role of government, for government to say, yes, we will protect you from this, and then sit down and commit the resources to do it. Now, we know what many of the technical solutions are. Certainly in Australia, we know that building wind and or solar energy is now cheaper than using coal-fired power. We can see in Europe, in places like Norway, where they have decent policies that electric vehicles are just running all over traditional petrol vehicles, which they're no longer selling effectively. We know how to insulate buildings so they use less energy. All these things are available to us. The technological solutions are at hand. It's a question of government saying, yes, we're going to do this.
Mm. Do you think in terms of curbing this, we would be looking at very radical changes?
Well, I think we have to because we've left this for too long. I mean, we've had international policymaking conferences for 25 years, a commitment in the early 1990s to do something about that. And in that time, the amount of planet warming greenhouse gases that humans put in the atmosphere every year has actually increased by 50%. So we're not getting on top of the problem. If we'd actually managed to you know, deal with it substantially 20 years ago, we would not be where we are now. But we know from our climate history that just the present level of greenhouse gases in the air, if you look back through previous times on the Earth, we know that the last time we had this amount of greenhouse gases was 3 million years ago. and the planet was 3 degrees warmer and sea levels were about 25 metres high. So we now have to do this really quickly. I mean, we need to do this in a decade, not in 50 or 100 years. So I don't think it's just the scale of the problem that means we've really got to act in an emergency or not business as usual role, but it's not the size, it's the speed of which we now have to do it because we've left it so long.
For New Zealand specifically, I think there's this idea that we are in this little corner of the world and everything will be all right and that we'll survive and adapt. What would you kind of say to that sentiment?
Well, I mean, I understand that. I mean, speaking to you from Australia, and we, like you, are a long way away from Europe. We're a long way away from the Syrian war. We're a long way away from the brawls within the European Union about migration issues. We're a long way away from Donald Trump in some ways. And it is true that New Zealand is lucky that it's quite close to the poles compared to other countries. I mean, climate change will have its greatest effects in the tropical regions, where not only are there a really large number of people living, particularly in Asia, but a lot of them are quite vulnerable because, you know, your capacity to respond to climate change is dependent on your standard of living. And in India or Bangladesh or Pakistan, there will be devastating impacts because it was simply so hot that people will not physically be able to live there without permanent air conditioning. So, yes, New Zealand, like Australia, we are relatively rich. We're well off. We think that we're insulated from these problems. But I guess it's a bit like looking like a flu outbreak in Europe and saying we'll be all right. And it turns out not to be the case because we are now so bound up into a global world. When you think of our communications, our trade, you know, if the New Zealand economy was facing the world around it that was seriously breaking down, it would have huge consequences at home. But I think also, you know, we have a moral duty as relatively rich nations to provide leadership in this, because this will be devastating, particularly for people who I said don't have the economic capacity we have to get out of this, to make the changes and to adapt.
Brilliant. That was all my questions, but did you have anything else you want to add?
I've spent quite a bit of time with young people in Australia recently, Extinction Rebellion and some others, and some people are quite bleak about the future, and there are reasons why that's happening. I mean, we have dreadful reports about the planet being in the sixth mass extinction in its history. There's been recent reports from the UN saying that the rate of insect loss around the world is dreadful. It could be as high as 2.5% per year. And obviously, insects, apart from being part of nature's very complex systems, are really important in our food production. We see a world economy which is struggling again. We have reports like the limits of growth saying that we are using more of Earth's resources than we are each year, and this can't go on. So we have a number of intersecting crises which are serious and can be depressing. And I know some people say, well, look, is it too late? I'm asked this question all the time. The answer is no, it's not too late. We do have the capacity to get out of this. So I say to people, don't spend your whole time asking how long before something bad will happen, because if we don't act, it will happen. The question to ask is, how fast can we change? How fast can we build a zero economy, a zero emissions economy? How fast can we get the political change? And the faster we can do with this, the more that we concentrate on asking and campaigning for a fast transition, the better off we'll be, both as a society and as a planet, but also in ourselves.
Why should New Zealanders care so much about this?
Because your children will curse you if you don't.
The Wire. That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.